leaders need to be more visionary of the future than experts of the past. My purpose is not to enlighten. It is to create the transformation, and that is where the value is. You with nothing yourself, right? That is the time to go inside. It is introspection, reflection, meditation, if you like, self-dialogue. Feel empowered, to be empowered, rather than being equipped.
Hey, you are listening to Dream 100 Business Show podcast with Savita Hosamani. Welcome to Dream 100 Business Show, listener. In this transformative episode, we speak to Mr. Yatin, who is the founder of Powerful Perspectives, a leadership development venture. He is a seasoned professional with over 34 years of corporate experience and a visionary leader in various industries. So here's what one can learn from listening to this episode. Gain valuable insights from Mr. Yatin's diverse expertise, as his extensive career spans across diverse industries, providing unique perspectives on leadership and business management. His visionary leadership in leading renowned organizations like Allergan India, Clinton Foundations, and Powerful Perspectives will help you to become a truly visionary leader. Gain insights into the intricacies of different cultures, businesses, and geographies in today's globalized world, and also discover his approach of inside-out learning, which can empower personal and professional transformation. Also, understand the significance of adding value to people's lives by making a meaningful difference. You can learn how value-driven leadership can lead to both personal fulfillment and professional success. Learn about the strategies and mindset needed to empower individuals and enabling them to transform their world according to their dreams and desires. So let's explore the challenges faced in leadership and how a deficit in perspective can hinder your success. So without any further delay, let's jump in and listen to what Mr. Yatin has to say in this wonderful episode. So a very warm welcome to Dream 100 Business Show, Mr. Yatin. It's truly an honor and pleasure to have you on our show. So let's get started.
Yes.
Your entire thing revolves around mindset. I would like to understand, what is the importance of mindset in personal development?
Okay. So we need to understand that mindset, or sometimes I call it as a mind orientation, is the power, that's the engine, which drives what you do with what you have. So if you have, a railway with bogies and, you know, engine is in mind power. Okay. Now let's take another example, which is simple and common in our corporate world. There are people who accomplish things and there are people who explain things, correct? The majority is the latter. So those people who explain why they cannot or could not do it are not less capable than the people who actually make things happen. Okay. The mindset of the former, the explainers, is what restricts them. Okay. How they think affects what they do and achieve. For example, if they think that they are sincere enough, they have taken enough efforts, and if they can explain to their superior, see, sir, I have done everything possible, then they think they have done their job. That is their mindset. They are not less capable. However, the latter group, the other group who makes things happen, their tuning is to the result. It's not to the activity. The first group is linked to activity. So you told me to send that email. I sent 10 emails. He did not respond. So there's no result. That's the first, right? So how you hold in your mind, that's a mindset. That decides what you do and achieve. Let me take another example, which is my concept called busyness to business. Okay. Now, busyness to me is a state of mind. It is not a physical state. It is certainly therefore not because of circumstances. Okay. Busy are the people who have become a captive slaves of time. They are riding a time horse whose reins are not in their head. Okay. Now contrast this with people like Dhirubhai Ambani. I'm just taking an example. I know he's no more. Take an example. Like people like Dhirubhai Ambani, who do not work any less, if you know their profile, but they are not busy. They are what I call as meaningfully engaged. It has to do with mine. I'll explain to you later. They are riding the time horse. They're driving the time horse with the reins firmly in their hand. So the horse doesn't take them where he wants. They take the horse where they want. That is the difference. Okay. So the people like Dhirubhai Ambani always had ample time to go for new opportunities. Whereas, as you know, busy people are too preoccupied with today to think of tomorrow. They will always tell you saying that, no, let me finish this. I will do this later. You know, this is a preoccupation with today. Now, this happens because of the different ways the minds of these two types of people are organized. To give you an example, mind of a meaningfully engaged person, you can imagine like an organized library. You know, library in books, it takes hardly any time to pick up the right. This is an organized library. Whereas the minds of those who are busy are disorganized, is a messed up things. You can also go to the rooms of people, see their work tables, and you know what I'm saying. Work table and rooms of those people who are well organized will also be well organized.
First of all, how does a person identify that I'm just meaningfully occupied or I'm just busy for the sake of being busy?
Okay. Busy people will always be struggling with time. It is not a physical time. Suppose you work for 12 hours and he works for 12 hours. A money type of person gets more accomplished, right? Therefore, they are stressed. Their mind state is agitated. They are not averse to, but they are not possible to respond to new opportunities. Suppose you take a new exciting project to them, saying that, boss, this, if you do, it will multiply so much. They say, oh, I will do it, but let me finish this. These are the signs of busyness. Okay.
If a person wants to shift in their mindset, so what do you think is the first step that they should do?
If you want to get out of it, the first is, I always say, is called awareness. See, awareness is a prerequisite for action. All we need to do with anybody, even in coaching, we need to create awareness, because creating awareness leads to action. I, as a coach, don't need to tell you what you need to do. I only need to make you awareness, like opening your eyes. When you open your eyes, you know what to do, right? Okay. Now, since the topic has come, let me tell you, I have defined awareness in four stages, four levels. One is no awareness, which means those people, even after things happen, do not realize what has happened. So they are destined to repeat their mistakes. Suppose you get angry, you don't realize that, you repeat that anger unnecessarily. The second level of awareness is you get a post facto awareness, in the sense you get angry and thereafter you realize, oh God, it should not have happened. That doesn't change, because it takes a lot of time. The third higher level of awareness is in the moment. If you are getting angry and realize that you're getting angry in the moment, there is some navigation possible. That is where the change starts. And the fourth higher level is pre. You are aware of yourself. You know your tendencies. You know that you're diabetic. You know that if you eat this will happen that. That is a pre-awareness. That is the stage when you reach, then you can change, right? This change cannot be thrust on anybody. I can't tell you that you are busy, I want to change you, right? You want to realize that this is not helping you, because you will be not taking many opportunities which are coming your way just because you are preoccupied, right? To give you another example, you go for a buffet. I'll take you to buffet as 100 items. Now, physically, even if you take this much of it, you cannot finish 100. Correct? So what do? You normally take a round and focus on those few that you can do justice to, right? Exactly is the way that you handle your business. Because the world will always have hundreds of problems, challenges, and opportunities. Which means, in standard English language, it's called prioritization. You got your priorities wrong. Your ABCs are wrong. And therefore, the help I provide to people, apart from awareness, is a tool which has the timetables, calendars, and so on. To-do things. You know, there's a tool called to-do things, things to do for today. I used to do it earlier. That helps you to mentally prioritize and say that out of 100 things, if I do these three, I'm done. You know, so coming to helping people who are busy, it's like that.
If one wants to go ahead and change the mindset from a busy person to a meaningfully occupied person, how does one do it?
I have a concept of body and soul. See, everything can be envisaged into two components, body and soul. Body is a physical and visible present. Right? That is the tools and techniques which are outside you. Soul is a driving force which is inside you. Right? So the aspect of awareness, which I told you, is an aspect of soul, which happens from inside.
Okay.
You need to do that, but I, as a coach, can help your process of awareness.
Awesome.
Once you become aware, you know, it's like the milk which has come to a boil, then you are enlightened to seek output. Then I will provide the outputs, which includes your priority planning. I also have a chart of a percentage time a person should spend. You know, there are 6 buckets I've created.
Mm-hmm.
One is for future, one is operational, one is systems, people development, and so on. And you'll be amazed to see how people at senior level and, you know, CEOs tend to spend 75% of the time for today and 25% for tomorrow. It actually should be the exactly opposite. So that is what awareness does. Then I give them the tool how to plan that. Then I convert that into the number of days in a month and so on, right? Then I use another tool called, I advise them importance of solo time. Okay? I ask people, saying that do you have investments? And they say, yes, so many. How much time do you spend? So they tell me time. So then I ask them, saying, how much time do you spend on yourself? That is a difficult question to answer. So I ask more difficult questions in that. So therefore, do you think you are an investment less worth than the investments that you're doing?
Oh.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that is a very piercing question which coaches are supposed to do. Then I advise them, saying that if you think you are worth more than the physical investment that you're doing, you need to proportionately invest in you. How? One of the item is solo time. Solo time is your time with yourself. You with you. It's not you alone. It's not you in front of TV. It's not you reading. You with nothing, yourself, right? That is a time to go inside.
Correct.
It is introspection, reflection, meditation, if you like, self-dialogue. You need to talk to yourself. Thereby, you get more in touch with yourself, right?
Awesome.
When you become in touch with yourself is when you realize what you want and what you need to do. Then the role of coach ends.
Great. If one does not bring in that awareness, so they are still under-leveraged and thereby their potential cannot be realized at all. Can you throw some light on how being severely under-leveraged happens?
Okay. It is my conviction that we are not under-talented, at least as much as severely as we are under-leveraged. Now, leveraging is about not what you have, but how much of that you bring into application. It's like a juicy fruit that is potential. How much juice, you know, that sugarcane fellows stalls
three, four times.
How much of that juice can you extract is leveraging. Okay, theek hai. So, actually, there was a long back, a worldwide, I think Gallup surveys, which said that most of the people are 95%. I mean, they go to the, that was the word. They go to their graves with 95% under leverage.
Ooh.
I mean, it can be exaggeration, but I can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's take an example and see this application in corporates also. And I'll tell you the risk of being under-leveraged. It's not just an academic concept. Okay. Let's take a mathematical case of one person with, let's say, 100 talent units, whatever it means. But he or she has 20% application. In a sense, you are lazy, you are attitude, you know, you may not want, you postpone. So let's take 20% as a conversion ratio in, let's say, factory language. So 100 talent units, at the rate of 20%, he produces 20 output units. Okay. Compare that with, let's say, a less talented person, half talented, let's say 50 talent units, but that fellow is very charged. So he has a 90% application value. So for 50 into 90% is 45. Now, compared to 20 of a talented person and 45 of a lesser talented person, tell me who should an organization choose? The choice is obvious. So I want to therefore defocus to an extent on talent. See, we have all talent obsession, unfortunately, whereas India is surplus of talent. We are not talent deprived. I want to highlight to this world and the corporate world saying that it is not acquisition of talent as much as it is about application. Right? What is the point in acquiring and buying more fruits and keep it on your shelf, then they will rot. Right? How much juice out of that you extract is going to give you nourishment. See, buying fruits doesn't give you nourishment.
Correct.
So that is application. So we have that dilemma, confusion between acquisition and application. That is one. Now I'll tell you the risk. Risk of under leveraging is like this, because it happens in most corporate, is, see, if you do not fully leverage my current human resources before I acquire more, which is called talent acquisition, we stand the dual risk. We stand the risk not only of multiplying inefficiency for the organization. Inefficiency was the first example I told you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talent units are 20%. When you make it bigger, the efficiency is also multiplies, right? So that is a big risk. And you can't tackle a big inefficiency at an overgrown organization. That is to be tackled when you're small.
Mm.
But there's another risk of leaving those resources, the people unfulfilled, because you're not here only for material gains. You need to feel fulfilled, right? I did something.
Correct.
I can't. Under leveraging is essentially about being unfulfilled, and that gets into a regressive cycle. So that's a dual risk. So that is why people have to be alive to this concept.
Awesome. So you have said that leaders need to lead through driving these powerful perspectives, be it in terms of acquisition or application, which you just brought in. Yes. It is a very powerful perspective. So can you give more examples on how powerful perspectives can help leaders to lead?
Sure. I'll give you a little background and give you an example. See, first, as a disclaimer, let us admit that leadership roles are complex. They are multidimensional. I mean, it'll be too oversimplified, I say, if I say that this is only that. Okay? So I say that. But having said that, I think to succeed, we must know what comes first, right? What is at core, as I say? What is that if leaders focus more can make a significant difference? Because that is why we are there. We are not there if you can't make any difference. Okay. So in today's age, I think what differentiates a leader is not his or her academics, talent, and experience, but in the singular factor is how much are these leaders able to inspire their teams and the ecosystem together to, you know, chase what seems to common people as impossible dreams and convert into reality. That is the power of a leader. Okay. So in a way, leaders need to be more visionary of the future than experts of the past. There are many so-called leaders are experts of the past, of the history, right? In my opinion, therefore, a leader is one who should shape future balance sheet and not manage today's P&L. Because there are many people below you to do that. So therefore, leaders need to create a big picture, a vision of the future, which is powerful enough to get your team's entrance captivated. Correct? Now, see how the task is difficult. Driving meaningful, but at times difficult agendas, because leaders will have to drive some difficult agendas in challenging times. That calls for abundant clarity and courage of conviction. And that is only possible when you have evolved perspectives, when you have well thought of pictures and scenarios that has the power to get people with you. Okay. And therefore, I say ability to hold and drive right perspectives as an acid test of a leader of today. So that is the background why I say. Okay. Now look at it differently. Not leaders, any one of us. See, each innovative idea or each powerful transformative thought, like what I'm saying, is like a perspective held by its creator. Okay. Now I'll give you an example. If I tell you that the one factor which is singularly responsible by its absence to result what I call as a substandard level of our service deliveries in India, that factor is one of the trigun called Satvikata. Now, this is a different thought. I have my conviction. I'll explain to you, right? But this is, I'm not giving you the typical management analysis saying that, oh, your people are not trained in service delivery. They are lazy. No. I'm actually working on this concept. So I believe that the singularly missing factor is Satvikata, which is actually making the trigun, you know, imbalance, pushing the service towards tamasic and rajasic. I'll explain to you. Hiding from customer or denying access to customer, which many companies do, is tamasic. Exploitation of customer is tamasic. Unfair practices is tamasic. What is rajasic? Rajasic is transactional equation. If I do this for customer, well, the schemes that you do is rajasic. Get one, buy one free is rajasic. So tum bhi kuch le lo, main bhi kuch leta hu. Both of us benefit is rajasic, right? Satvikata comes when you do the thing because you're convinced that's the right thing to do. You think that is a purely in customer's interest, and you need to be convinced that if I fulfill customer interest, my interests are already protected. That is a higher level of thinking. That is Satvik thinking. I'm not doing because you will give me two references more. No, like the Reader's Digest scheme. Give me five references, you get one copy free. Fair enough, but that's rajasic. So that is why you find corporate hospitals the best example. You have the best of infrastructure, huge buildings and a lot of money spent. You have best of doctors and talent. Oh, you have best of technology and machines, and you still find the service levels missing. Mm. That is because their enhancing body, soul is missing.
Correct.
Soul is in being Satvik, in the sense you need, like a mother and child, You need to be dedicated to the cause.
Hmm.
That is missing. Everything is transactional today, right? Hmm. So that is the perspective. That's an example. So if I actually to tell you, I'm working currently with an organization who wants to be pioneer in implementing this thought. So I'll conduct service workshop.
Hmm.
If that works, then we will expand. But that's my conviction. So that's a perspective I bring. It's not whether it's right or wrong. It's whether how much conviction I put in behind and how much I push it. No? So that is the power of perspective.
Ultimately, it is the leader's conviction, the leader's vision, which will drive the entire team towards achieving what they want to achieve.
Correct. So, just one line. See, the so therefore, your world is not outside you. It's inside you.
Mm.
You only bring it outside.
Oh, so that is what the outside in and inside of the pathway is, which you explained all this while.
Hmm. Yes.
So now, can you share three tips on how individuals can start making a shift in their mindset from outside to the inside?
Okay. Just allow me to explain sometime the principles outside and inside also. But let me take your question now. Okay. So I'm happy to give you four tips, one free. Okay. Before that, let's... See, I always say, always connect with the, you know, it is macro, micro. When you ask me for macro, I connect with micro and then, so I connect with the roots first. See, three important aspects, which are indicators that you have the right ending, mind orientation or measurables is higher clarity, deeper insights and alternative perspectives. And each has a role to play. Razor sharp clarity, which a leader should have, helps you cut through any ambiguity or complexity in life. Most of the talented people which get stuck is because of lack of clarity. That is one. Deeper insights gives you a confident grip on the subject matter. That is where the conviction comes in. And developing alternative perspectives leads you to solution. Those people, talented people get stuck because they can't create options. They can't create options, they can't choose options, they repeat problem, right? So these are the indicators which tell you that you are have right mind orientation. Okay. Now let me tell you the ways to do it. So I've divided it between external mode and internal mode. And under each, there are two tips. Therefore, let's take the internal mode first. Internal is about essentially about self-discovery. Partly I spoke a little while earlier.
Mm.
I told you the both components, external and internal. It is self-discovery in the sense you need to get to know yourself. See, if you are not enough aware of yourself, how can you leverage yourself?
Absolutely.
You will under leverage, right? If Sachin Tendulkar does not know whether he has a talented batting and bowling, he'll just be doing blind play, correct? Okay. So it's about knowing self. Who am I? What I am, what I am not. What is my purpose of life? To use my earlier analogy, what is my unique pattern of Trigun? Everybody has a different combination of Sattva, Raja, Tama. You need to know that because your anger, etc. comes from there. Okay. That knowing is an internal process. And therefore, for this, you need to use that inside out mechanism, which are like, I think I mentioned earlier, which is like reflection, introspection, meditation, and self-dialogue. It is possible to practice. I've been practicing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you self-discovery. This is one tip. Second tip I would say is to urge everybody to do whatever they do with extreme devotion and dedication. Okay, mm-hmm. So those are the two things for internal mode. There are two things you can do in the external mode. Again, we need to understand that any task can be defined in three components. What, why, and how.
Mm-hmm.
What is the destination? Why is the purpose, reason for doing it? How is the process, the pathway? Clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you keep that orientation in mind and consciously practice, so next time you are in the process, either briefing your team or getting briefed on a task, insist on understanding why first, because that's an anchor.
Hmm.
Okay, understand why of what you're doing before you get to how to do it.
Hmm.
Because that gets you the connect with the purpose. Correct? Purpose makes the difference. Okay, so that's a third point. Fourth is external thing that you can do is I would advise people to read some thought-provoking reading, something which is insightful and brings in fresh perspectives. Not the entertaining stuff, not the fiction, etc. Right? Something which can open the windows of your mind and trigger an independent thinking. It's like lighting a lamp in your mind space. Because if the lamp is on, that light, you can find your way. You don't depend on external. Like the reading or like the writing I do, for example, I'm sure many people do that, is on this platform. I don't write to inform you. I write to invoke thinking in you.
Wow.
These are the four things I think people can try.
Awesome. So how does one empower internal awakening? Like once somebody becomes aware and they are starting to become alive, how do they empower this awakening within themselves?
Okay, so I'm glad you brought me to another topic. See, I'll just get one step back and bring you back here. The difference when you get connected to the purpose, and it's a passion. The difference between body and, dead body and live body is that passion, is that soul. Okay, let's come to empowerment. See, traditionally, concept of empowerment is empowerment from outside. Like you empower somebody, right? It is like a gift you're giving to somebody, or bestowing an honor.
Correct.
I find it very patronizing and non-adult thought, because I think it works on three false assumptions. One, first, it believes that it is our role and discretion to choose who do we want to empower, which is wrong. Second, it presumes that somebody is dependent on us for us to do that. And three, it presumes that we have that higher power to do it. All three are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fundamentally, just like goodness, you cannot thrust empowerment from outside. It has to blossom from inside. Okay. A person being empowered has to feel empowered to be empowered, mm-hmm. rather than being equipped. What is the point in a small child, you know, if I take it up in dad's clothes and etc. It doesn't even fit. He doesn't grow overnight because you worn those kind of clothes, right? It has to. Tell me, who empowers the seed except itself to grow into a tree?
Mm.
Correct.
It
is the wish and the potency of the seed. It is inside.
Mm.
What happens from outside is we can only aid the process by creating the right ambience, by providing the soil, water, sunlight, fertilizers, whatever, right? Take the same case for human beings. I think it's the awakening which you talked about of being empowered, feeling empowered. You can incubate that. You can only facilitate that process as stakeholders. Mm-hmm. As organization and your teams or team leaders, whatever, as stakeholders can facilitate that process by creating a kind of a thriving framework, which is three components. One is a positive disposition, which means the thought process, the culture, the organization has to have that culture. Second is capability building. Okay. And the third is indulgent monitoring. In the sense, you monitor not to trap somebody. It is indulgent monitoring. You are monitoring that person to make that person success. Okay. So this is what you can do. So we need to first of all understand on from our side that we are not God to empower anybody, but we can help the process. Right. And the other person, each of us needs to understand saying that the power to empower me is myself. No one else can empower. That is a correct combination. That is when you sow the seed in the soil. Organization provides you the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Seed is an individual. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So can you provide a specific example of how these concepts has been successfully implemented and it has led to a positive change in an individual or in an organization?
Okay. Sure. I think the organization is because I'm currently working on.
No, okay. You can share that example.
Okay. My purpose is not to enlighten. It is to create the transformation. And that is where the value is. Because knowledge is everywhere. Nobody needs me for that. Hmm? Okay. Now, let me take a recent example of implementation of a concept called selection by constitution. Okay. Constitution is something which defines the person. It's a set of beliefs, values, attitudes, orientation, outlook to work, outlook to life that a person brings with him or her. You can't give it from outside. Okay. And that is what differentiates the person. Okay. So under this, we are challenging the conventional way of recruiting, which I call bodies, recruiting numbers, bodies, by using resume or CV parameters like academics, skills, exposure, training, skilling, etc. Right? Correct. Now that I think is a mistake. I call these as acquisition parameters for one simple reason, because all of these inputs can be acquired from outside, as against the constitution. Okay. Selection by constitution establishes the primacy, the priority or superiority of the application apparatus. Remember, I referred to application earlier. Application apparatus over the conventional acquisition parameters. Okay. Because underlying a principle is like this. See, if you are lacking in some knowledge, I can give it to you. I can send you to a course. I can train you. So if you're a right person otherwise and lacking in acquisition parameters, I have a wherewithal to equip you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a way to help you in constitution. So that is a primacy. Okay. And I believe this process, by going by how assessing a person's mindset and finding out how close constitutional fit it has with organizational needs. Remember, organization also have a constitution.
Right?
And you have, you know, in marriages, you match kundalini.
Yes.
That's in a way of, you know, it's an alignment. You know how talented people, let's say you take a person who's been working for a lifetime with Ambani style of working and you bring him into Tata. There may be a constitutional difference. It's not about talent, right? So I bring that factor as most important factor in my selection. Okay. Because I believe this process gives you better predictive feel on the efficacy on the job of the person as well as the sustainability, retention. Because if the alignment is high, the retention will be high. Okay. Now, if we don't do that and go by conventional way and by mistake, you select a donkey in place of a horse. Your job description is for a horse, but you have a mistake, no? You select donkey. Now, there is no training program which can convert a donkey into a horse. Training program, what it can do is can at best make a donkey a better donkey. Okay. That is the limitation of the training program. Mm-hmm. So your best bet is at the selection level, not correction at training level. Okay. So what we have done under this concept called selection by constitution, we have developed a two-phase selection process. In the first phase is a phase of rejection where we eliminate or remove those who are non-suitable using the conventional manners, which is JD, CV and so on. That's a conventional. Then for the shortlist, we use the second phase, which is called selection by constitution. We use an instrument called right person profile or RPP. Now RPP is basically a set of 4 to 5 desired parameters of constitution. For example, you have an organization, it is in a phase of growth in such a way that it requires people who could be independently working, who could be problem solving, who could be high on integrity, something like that. This has got nothing to do with your academics and course that you do. These are constitutional parameters. So based on the nature of organization and the phase of business that it is in, it is possible to distill a few parameters which can define the nature of the organization that you put in RPP as a desired factors to look for in the constitution of a candidate. And this is matching kundalini. And then we have developed an appropriate methodology to assess. So our major focus in getting the constitutional fit, whatever polishing we require, that we can do that later. But you can't change orange into mango, mango into orange.
Absolutely.
Right. So when we are implementing this, it's still in the implementation. The organization has reduced the percentage of wrong hires with this process. See, because remember, wrong hires don't cost only in exist, but they also cost in existence. Mm-hmm. They cost you even when they exist, not only in their existence.
I thank Mr. Yatin from the bottom of my heart for sharing his powerful perspectives in adding value to people, making a meaningful difference and empowering others to succeed, to find fulfillment in their lives and thereby invoking aliveness in each one of us. My top three learnings include: learning number one, the significance of being meaningfully occupied and not being just busy. My second profound learning is that awareness is a prerequisite for action. My third learning is that when you get in touch with your own self, you start realizing what you want and what you need to do. So before we wrap up this insightful episode, we have got some exciting news for you. We have one more consecutive episode packed with valuable insights from Mr. Yatin Thakur. So make sure to catch up the upcoming episode as well. And before you go, we would love to hear from you. If you found today's conversation as impactful as we did, please take a moment to rate this episode and share your thoughts in the comments. Your feedback is invaluable to us. Share these insights with your colleagues, friends, and fellow business enthusiasts. Let's spread the knowledge and empower more businesses to thrive. Thank you for tuning in, and we can't wait to have you in our next episode. Stay curious, stay inspired, and keep chasing those dreams. Thank you so much for being such a wonderful listener.